Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I am your co-host, Jason Snellen, across the bay from me on this warm day, joining you live and direct, simultaneously worldwide, chief TV critic of The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm, eating a popsicle. It's summer.
That is the way to go.
What is better at summertime than a popsicle? I don't know. Probably
don't
not
know.
Very much.
Maybe a super ice cold beer.
Yeah, I almost went that way. I actually was thinking beer or popsicle, and I said, I'll save the beer for later and just have a popsicle now.
That is actually good. I might throw a little Texas barbecue in there, but that would have been last week.
Yeah, you and David, I felt like, were just lording it over me last week about your trip to Austin.
We're going to get you there one of these days.
Yeah, they just need to not put it the weekend before Apple's developer conference.
I don't think they can put it like in the same month as the Apple developer conference.
You know, we could work it out if it was later, but that would be something that would be helpful.
Yeah.
But we're back. It's been like 3 weeks since we've done an episode because we did the double booking for when you were going to Austin and then you came back. It's so long. I've got a lot of letters, so I guess we should just kind of kick into what's new, which is not a lot. And then we'll get caught up with the listeners who've been sending in lots of stuff.
That sounds good. Yeah, that sounds
great. So things you reviewed recently that I think we need to talk about. Tell me about 13 from BBC America, which I think just premiered or is about to premiere.
It was
premiered Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday night.
As we record this, yes.
And I think people should catch up on it. I think there's ways to do it, whether it's video on demand or maybe if you go to the BBC America site, it'll be on there. Also, check your local listings. It's probably rerunning. Yeah, I like it. It's five parts, so it's a very small summer commitment. It's going to run for 5 weeks. And what I like about it is that it's, you know, it's a story about abduction. It's interesting in that in England, in Britain, they posit in this show that there hasn't been a an actual abduction and live return. Like, no one has escaped, no one has come back alive, which I don't know is true or not, which is interesting because if it is, that's kind of amazing. And so this story is set around it. And as I noted in my review, all women are involved in this. A woman wrote it and created it. Two women are the directors. A woman as executive producer from Luther and many other shows. And it has that feel. It has that vibe where it's not like a big muscular macho like let's the cops bring this guy down and kick the door in and like this gruesome chain of events. It's much more about the fallout from the victim. And then it explores her being an unreliable narrator and whether that is something she should be judged for. And I think that part is really interesting because, you know, I think in our country, we're like, oh, she's lying or she's partly lying on something, so we can never trust her. And then you write her off as like somebody who's just either wrong or lying or damaged or Stockholm syndrome. And this one kind of covers all those bases, but basically says, what if she's just messed up? And it's interesting. It's, you know, and I like that they're in and out five episodes. So I strongly recommend people try that. Just and an amazing acting performance in the middle of it from an actress I've never heard of. And she just kind of nails it. You can't take your eyes off of her. She does a really kind of interesting, nuanced performance. And she's really good. I got to say, she's really good. Just when you think like, oh, she's lying. No, she's right. You know, her face really says a lot. So that one I think people should watch.
Cool. I haven't grown up in Northern California. You know, I know the Stephen Stainer story, which is similar, where he was abducted at 7 and at 14 escaped with another abducted child. And we've seen some other examples recently of that too, so it's certainly a compelling story about, because you end up with all of the issues of, you know, surviving something horrible and coming back to a family that hasn't had you around, and So yeah, I'll check it out. That looks sounds good. Really interesting. Yeah,
they hit. You know, she was abducted at 13 and comes out 13. She's 26. So, but you know, there's stunted growth there. And but yeah, it explores the ripple effect of everybody involved, from family on down to like old friends. And it's good. It's not as trite as ABC's The Family, where the kid comes back and messes up her political career. So you know, there's more going on there, and I think it's because it's just written better.
How about something, speaking of things that are well written, okay, maybe not, American Gothic. You reviewed it on Twitter. You suggested that you were just laughing and laughing and laughing. I almost got an Agent X kind of level vibe from your from you. You just kind of turned the corner and just started being amused by it. Your bottom line on THR.com is so bad. So to elaborate, please.
Well, it's a serial killer story, so I shouldn't be laughing. And yet there I was, just like dying laughing. And I did try to put in the review that, like, you know, this is not funny enough to watch all 13 episodes, because that's just, no one needs to waste their time like that.
Right.
And it doesn't have any of the fun charm of Agent X, kind of like shut the front door, that kind of stuff. And where you can just say like, okay, not a thing. They just walking underneath the ground across Washington D.C. None of that. What it does have, it's the cast. They all seem to be acting in a different show. So that I always find that amusing. It's just like, okay, who directed this? And who is telling people behind the scenes that they should act one way or the other? And there are some, you know, there's some pretty good, Justin Chatwin, who was really good in Shameless. He's in this, but the real star is his hair, which was one of the funniest things that I didn't want to be so distracted by it. Like, but literally the first time I saw him, I was like, oh, wow. Like, what's going on there? It's totally teased out, his hair. And then you think, oh, well, he just clearly woke up and he's rattled. No. He is like that all the time, and it's just so crazy that every time he comes into a scene, you're thinking, I can't even approach this. I can't even take this seriously because I'm laughing at his hair. Mm. Oh God, what's his name? Who stars in Banshee? Who's a great action guy and funny and, you know, electric. And he's like propulsive.
Oh, Anthony Starr.
Anthony Starr. He's so fun to watch in Banshee. And in this, it's like they said, okay, it's like somebody said, okay, here's what I want you to think of. You've been hit really hard in the head and you've never recovered. So he just kind of lumbers around and ominously. He comes back after 14 years. And of course, everybody thinks he did it. And he, you know, he gets his... I'm not even going to make this part up, Jason. He says he was living in Maine in a shack in the woods, and he was eating squirrels a lot. That's a part of it. That's actual dialogue. And you see him ominously sharpening his knife while looking at the house like he's going to go cut up his family. And then the next scene is him shaving his beard with the knife. And I was like, okay, really, this is just so bad. And then he just kind of stumbles around half asleep. And he's an actor you really want to be electric and moving around, not comatose. So there's all kinds of problems. And the acting's bad and the writing's bad. And there's nothing. Oh, and there's a kid who is like so over the top devious. He just says awful things all the time, like constantly, to the point where they're funny. And you just think, okay, what will this kid say now? And he did say... So the dad dies, and he says, does he have bad breath because he's dead? Can I smell his breath? Can I touch his body? Is his fingernails growing? Oh my God, kid. Yeah. Yeah, I suffered through that one. So please, no one watch that.
Don't watch American Gothic.
Yeah,
I did. On CBS.
On CBS. Yeah, I did that one for you.
It's some light summer fare about a serial killer on CBS. Mm-hmm.
And some hair.
Yeah.
Summer hair.
Hair for the summertime. All right. I wanted to ask you about the sad state of music shows. I know you love music. You used to be a music critic. You got some music projects in the works. So tell me, First off, you and David talked about roadies last week. Your review was now out. We'll put it in the show notes. It was not out when you guys talked. But it's not good, which, like you said last week, I'm very disappointed that it's not good, because I like Cameron Crowe, and I think that he gets why people connect to music, and he gets why how music can be connected to visuals in clever ways in film and on television. So I'm so sad that it didn't work out. And then we also got the news this week that Vinyl, which was problematic in its first season, as you pointed out several times on this show, was going to come back for a second season, but they got rid of the showrunner, and now HBO has declared, yeah, we don't really want it back, so it's dead.
We give up.
Mm-hmm. So it's a tough out there for music TV. I know you put out a plea. We actually have a couple of letters who answered your plea about you know, other ways of doing music based TV. But this is it's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, it's the thing that struck me is that one's really bad. Just to back up a little bit for Vinyl. Yeah, it was renewed under a different regime. They fired that person.
Right.
And then the new guy was like, let's not do this anymore.
That's right. It's the new guy. It's the new guy at HBO now.
Yeah, it's the new HBO guy.
We're just going to unrenew it.
Yeah, and I think he's probably right, because if that's a pattern, he should probably not renew True Detective either, because I don't think he wants Vinyl season 2 to be True Detective season 2, and he doesn't want, I don't think he would want any more True Detective. The problem with the past regime at HBO is they didn't say no to a lot of people, and they got themselves into messes that they tried to fix while in production, and that's always a bad idea. And so this new guy, I like the idea of him stepping in and saying, I don't care that it's got all these great directors and all these great rock stars involved with it. We're just done with it. I don't care if it's 120 million or whatever it is. We're done. That was bold. Cause I did a column a while back saying, I don't think it can be saved after liking it at the beginning. Here we are again with Roadies and Cameron Crowe. And I remember saying, oh, well, at least we've got that coming forward. And now that it's out and it's bad. And I honestly don't think that's going to turn around, because the pilot he did is bad. The second episode is a little bit better, but the third episode, he directed them all. He wrote the first and third, and the third is enough to never watch it again. And that's problematic if you're hoping it's going to get better. And I think, as I said in my review, that some of the issues that I have with the Roadies are baked in. The characters are caricatures. I have all these notes that I took that said, how is this a Cameron Crowe show? And how did Cameron Crowe do this? Those are not good notes you want to look back on, right?
I know. That's not good. It seemed like such a an interesting idea, and it's disappointing that it didn't work out.
I would have loved for him to do some television and do this, but I don't think he... You know, it's a different muscle, so I don't know if he's got that one down yet. But I think when you create all these characters that are not memorable and cliches, and you have, I don't know, I mean, there's some, as I wrote my review, I don't even know who half of them were. You don't know who the band is. I literally, was like, oh, that's the other guy in the band. Oh, okay. And then there was one guy that they keep showing. He has, a half of a line in every show. He's like, oh, hey, man. And then you don't see him again. And then next time he's one of the Roadies, but you're thinking, okay, well, what do you do? And I looked after my review had already gone on, I got the hard copy show notes from Showtime, and they said he's the accountant. And I started laughing. I was like, oh, really? Because I would have never known that for three episodes that he was the accountant. But the show, it has so many troubles. If you can't identify characters, how are you going to make anyone want to come back? It's a really big mess. So don't watch.
Don't watch it. Mm-hmm. Another piece that you and Dan Feinberg wrote is about pleas to the Emmys for the Emmy nominations, which come out on July 14th. I figure maybe we'll come back to this in a week or two, since, they'll be out then. And or they'll be about to come out. We could probably defer this a little bit, can't we? Don't you?
Yeah,
think?
I think so. And
push that out there.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, there'll be more.
Yeah, we'll have plenty of opportunity. I appreciate this. This is a good thing about journalism. You see this and you're like, ah, yeah, they know what they're doing, which is first you talk about what you want to be nominated. Then the nominations come out and you can talk about the aftermath of the nominations, how they went and what's wrong with them. And then the awards get closer and you get to talk again about like who should win and who will win. And mm-hmm. then the awards come out and you get to talk about who actually wins and what that meant. You get like six stories out of this one thing. It's the way to do it. You got to do it that way.
There's a lot, and there'll be tons more. And even before they probably finish with the nominations, because they're not announced until July, we'll definitely have more stuff out, probably both Dan and I.
The other thing I wanted to mention, this will be of interest to the people out there who are listening worldwide simultaneously, is Brexit happened.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I saw a funny headline that was, what Brexit will mean to Game of Thrones, which is the dumbest headline of the week, I think, in some ways. But they shoot a lot of Game of Thrones in Northern Ireland, and there was a question. It was really a story about like subsidies and how the TV industry in general and the film industry too rely on subsidies, and there's like EU credits, and there are all these things, and there was a question about that. I think the answer is that Game of Thrones will be done shooting by the time the UK leaves the European Union. So I think the answer is not really at all, but it'll be interesting. I found myself more concerned about didn't you mention on Twitter this too, which is like how catastrophe, you know, you got an Irish character in yeah. London, and it's like, will she be able to stay there, or is she gonna have to go somewhere else? Or
yes, I think that was I think that might have been James Bonnywansack from
it could have been. I saw somebody tweet about it, and I'm worried about Sharon.
I'm worried about Sharon.
I hope Sharon's going to be okay because she's Irish, and she's, although, you know, the Irish English relationship, they have their own special relationship that goes back a long time. So it'll probably be fine. And also it's fiction anyway. So we're as a Doctor Who guy, I think, oh my goodness, what if Scotland leaves the UK? I mean, the last showrunner is from Scotland. The two of the last three Doctor Who leads have been from Scotland. What happens if there are no Scottish people, or do they move? Do they stay in? And they do it in Wales too. So what? I don't know. It's just I'm concerned about what's going to happen there. But there's nothing I can do about it because I'm a bloody American and I don't know anything about anything.
As Job would say, I think they've made a huge mistake.
Alas, we want to listen to the listeners, get some listener.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see what they say.
I realized not too long ago that that on the old TVTM, you also took phone calls from time to time.
I did, yeah.
And I have I'm going to remind myself to set up some way for people to send in audio. Maybe we'll add that to the mix at some point down the road.
Oh,
it's
tricky.
It's much more tricky technically, but maybe we'll do it. We'll see. But for now, the written word will have to do. We have our Dean travel update. Dean from the 707. Lots going on with Dean because we've been gone for a few weeks from the letters area, at least. He sent us a bunch of things. He sent us a picture of himself in Park Slope, Brooklyn. And he listed all the shows that have been set in Brooklyn over the years. But the best part is he's in front of a subway station, the stairs leading down into the subway, holding his iPhone up with the TVTM logo on it.
Yeah.
So that's bravo. Well done, Dean. He sent us a link that I'll put in the show notes to a blog post. He reached the halfway point in his USA trip. He's been to 25 different states, and he wrote a little blog post about what he's done in all those states. So people can check that out in the show notes at theincomparable.com/TVTM/88. That's where you'll find it. And then the most recent note we got from Dean, he said he started traveling by plane instead of minivan for a few weeks and watched Northern Exposure in Alaska.
Yes, because you can't get there by minivan. But
No. He went all the way to New York and New Jersey and all that, and now he's taken, hopefully he'll be going to Hawaii after Alaska before coming back to the 707 and starting the next leg of his adventure. So, yes, and he pointed out, you know, David Chase, who went on to do some other interesting television, involved in Northern Exposure. So
yeah, and I love this show. And as we said before, that's the one that should be remade. If you're going to remake one, do that one.
That would be great.
He's on a great trip, by the way. Let's not kid ourselves. I'm totally jealous.
Well, Alaska, especially. That's yeah. That's amazing.
So but there's bears. They don't drop bears, but they have bears, which also would scare me.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they don't drop. That's exactly it.
They don't drop. Our bears don't drop. So I guess they're safer. They're a lot bigger, though, because they're grizzlies.
Yeah, but they don't drop. I mean, I'm just saying you can see them coming, probably.
Yeah, and you would know not to be way out someplace.
Can you imagine a Drop Grizzly? I don't even want to think about it. That would be terrible.
Oh, my God. That's a great band name, the Drop Grizzlies.
The Drop Grizzlies, yeah. Where we were I took an Alaska cruise, and we were in Glacier Bay, and we were looking over at the land part opposite the where the glaciers were, and it's just, you know, it's rocks and stuff going up into the hills and the trees, and we're like, oh, look, it's a bear. And it's like, seriously, it's just like, there's just bears around, there's just a bear walking around. We're like, yeah, it's Alaska.
Yeah, right.
Guess they got bears here. They really do.
Lots of bears. They do. It's from the Yukon.
Yeah, lots of bears. Okay, so next up is Lee from the 617, who tweeted at us saying, I noticed Orphan Black is dropping uncensored F-bombs this season. You have any thoughts about basic cable pushing the swear envelope? What do you think?
Huh.
Did he catch a late night version? I know I've heard that happens now, where some cable shows will do bleeps during like prime time, but then they'll rerun it at 1 a.m. and they won't bother bleeping it.
I don't know. Well, it's interesting because they have a while ago, like this is 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, John Landgraf from FX said that they could say whatever they wanted, and he said he's not going to say. He said it was just their policy not to say the F and the C word, but that they could say it. And, you know, I remember thinking, I guess that's actually true because there is no FCC oversight on cable. And right. They have, you know, we've heard of the Family Hour, which was, you know, never put into law. It was just a threat to broadcasters that they could lose their license if they did such a thing. And then cable had what they called the safe harbor. And the industry took it upon itself to use 8 to 9 o'clock, just like the Family Hour, as the quote unquote safe harbor where your kids could watch from 8 to 9 and not do it. I don't think that applies anymore because you see stuff at 8 and 9 o'clock that's crazy. But yeah, I think that I don't think that they can get in trouble. So I think it could just be people would say, hey, I heard something on your show and it was rude and it, my family was watching and I'm never going to watch your show again. You lose listeners, or I'm sorry, viewers. And, you know, maybe they call your advertisers and your sponsors and they say, hey, I hate that they're swearing on this show and you should not buy their stuff. But I don't know. I don't think that there's a rule right now.
It's interesting. Yeah. Like I said, I think some places they just...
Someone's going to fact check that on us.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere that sometimes what they do is they clean up some stuff. Although even it's cable, like they're very limited in what they even clean up. But I have heard that there's like an early showing and then there's like the late showing. It gets a little blue in the late showing.
Yeah.
And I definitely noticed that with, I think it's The Magicians, where they very clearly didn't shoot it for censorship. So everybody, you know, when they drop F-bombs, they just drop them.
Yeah.
And the Sci-Fi Channel would just silence them out.
Yeah.
And, it was okay, I guess, except I did feel like it was... Once you get to that point, it feels kind of stupid. Like, why are you protecting me from this? It was in your show. Why are you protecting me?
Right. And, yeah. And, like, I know what it is. Yeah. It's tough. It's an interesting one. I'm sure someone will fact check it, but that's something that I think I looked at like 5 or 6 years ago. So I'm a little bit dated on.
Yeah.
I can't imagine things got less or got better.
Yeah.
I think it would be more swearing.
Seems probably mm-hmm. so. Indy Sarah wrote in with a suggestion for you. She's one of our favorites. She wrote in with a suggestion.
This makes sense.
For a TV show about a rock band.
There we go. I'm putting the pieces together.
This is a good one. I love an early 90s set show about a suddenly big college rock act and their emotionally split supporters. The perspective of small-time DJ as fan can be really interesting. Fame is betrayal, and what does airplay mean? So this is like, you know, whenever you love a band, whether it was like, I was going to say like REM or even Husker Du, do is like this. Like, you get your major label contract and everybody's like, yeah. Like, I remember when REM hit it big, that they were such a cult band for so long, and people, a lot of their cult fan, their fans, they were just kind of disappointed when suddenly they were just popular. And what goes into that? So I think this is a really clever suggestion here of this idea that they suddenly got big, and what that means, how that's reflected in the lives of the fans and the DJs and things like that, maybe even more than the band. I don't know.
Yeah, I read some, there was a piece somewhere that I read that bands that I don't think like that, but they certainly did in those days. Yeah. I mean, selling out was a huge thing. And I think because the industry, and it's just so hard now to like make a living, that I was reading something somewhere online that bands are absolutely endorsing, like having their songs picked up and played on television shows, having their songs played in commercials. Nobody's like, oh, we're selling now. And maybe the new generation of listeners are like, yeah, that's great, I hear it everywhere. Whereas I distinctly am on Indie Sarah's side, where I was like, oh, come on, Replacements, you know, that kind of thing. Like, who's selling out? Which is kind of quaint now, but. Yeah, that was always tough. And that lasted for a long time. And it's like you just couldn't – there were things you couldn't do. And it's like, what kind of standard were we holding these poor musicians to?
Right. All right. This is another idea, although I have to say, Jonathan and the +44, I appreciate how excited he is, but there's not a lot of detail here. But anyway, he is a pitch. As the recipient of this pitch, I would say, you know, you need more detail for your show. But he says, idea for a rock and roll pilot TV show, a 3-day rock festival with aging rock superstar and backing group, with new internet musicians snapping at their heels, movie stars flying in for the music and the scene, with fans, bikers, and rock journalists. What could possibly go wrong or be more ridiculous? Maybe a miniseries idea, actually. Remember, Tim, I pitched it to the TV Talk Machine first. From Jonathan and the +44, first-time TV producer, showrunner of the Rock and Roll Show.
I love that he's already savvy enough to start taking credit.
Yep.
Right? He's already got his executive producer credit. That's key. If we've learned nothing on this show, don't be a producer, be the executive producer. You make more money. But yeah, that would have to be limited, because if you, a 3-day event, you know, kind of Altamont type thing, where things could go totally disastrously bad, or from where he's from, where the summer concerts in England are. I mean, we have ours too, but there's kind of
Glastonbury.
Yeah, that's going forever, and there's just so many
mud bands.
Yeah, that would be a good miniseries. I think it's funny because all these ideas are like Sarah's thing. It has to be almost it has to be retro, right? I mean, it has to be of its era, because again, like I said, I don't think we have that feeling. But yeah, I would love that. If, I think what's missing from a show is all these shows seem to want to get at the heart of what rock and roll is and what it does to people who are true believers. But both, you know, both Vinyl and Roadies missed it. So yeah, if these two can get it, like you said, there's a DJ who kind of was like helped break the band and now feels crushed that they're going on. That'd be pretty good. All right, so we got the 3-day festival. Anybody else have an idea?
Nope, those are our two ideas for now. But more,
oh, people.
More are welcome. More are always welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Ashamed Alex in the 908. Now, you may remember Alex. He's the one who started our our series of factual inaccuracies and letters.
Yes, he's the one who ruined our trust in anybody.
Yep, that's right. He says, right. Hey guys, thanks for always putting out a simultaneous worldwide release, even when it occasionally requires defying the laws of space and time. Speaking of which, after listening to how down you guys have been on the CW shows in the Arrowverse, I wondered what your thoughts are on TV shows set in shared universes. In these times of confusion, it strikes me a shared universe series, which can feature the occasional crossover episode, is one way a show can set itself apart from all the other similar shows in its genre. However, shared universes can also make you feel like you need to keep watching a show long past the point of caring, just in case you miss a crossover connection with the show you still enjoy. And with so many shows out there, that can be tough to justify. Legends of Tomorrow. I didn't dare do historical research on the topic this time. Good job, Alex. Good job. But it seems like this storytelling convention has a long history in TV. I know recently the trend towards shared universes has been dominated by comic book shows like Marvel's Netflix universe or the Arrowverse, but we also have the ever-expanding Chicago municipality universe. And before my time, we once saw weather events and blackouts crossing over multiple sitcoms airing on the same night. Is this something you guys like, or is it a trend we should do away with for the sake of our sanity? What do you think about crossovers?
My knee-jerk reaction is I hate them. I hated all those NBC promos where there would be like thing, and one thing blackout would affect everybody, or would all the sitcoms would have the same thing. Hate. That's a gimmick. I don't want you to mess up my fake universe with your fake dilemmas. But I don't like the idea of, you know, I mean, I'm not going to like stand here and say that all the Chicago series are art, but I don't like the idea of, you know, if I were to actually watch and like these shows, I don't want Chicago PD people coming in with the Chicago Fire people. That bugs me. I don't like that. But I'm okay with the comic book world where people come in and out. I think probably because I'm used to it from Marvel and the movies and those things. I'm fine with that part. And maybe that's just, I don't know, that is a historic thing, but I don't like it on my regular TV shows.
Yeah, I don't mind it because I do think it brings in richness. And I mean, like, I watch Arrow because I watched The Flash, and I was like, oh, it's crossing over with Arrow. That's interesting. Maybe I should give that a try. So that I guess it worked on me. Although, yeah, I also watched Legends of Tomorrow, and I just regretted it because it was a problem. So I don't know. My gut feeling is it can be useful, but it can also be misused, and it's sort of like up to everybody to decide what the right level is. I think I really have enjoyed when the characters have crossed over in the Marvel Netflix shows. They've been restrained in their use of that, but it's been nice moments when that's happened, and you get the sense that there's a larger universe out there, and that can be fun. And you know, who didn't love it when Magnum PI met Simon and Simon and Murder, She Wrote?
Wow, that's terrible.
It's true. It happened. Those were different crossovers, but they did. It all did happen.
It was just terrible.
Yeah. And don't forget the Dallas Falcon Crest crossovers that were so popular.
Oh my god, yeah, that's before my time, thank god.
The funny thing about that is, and this actually goes to The Flash, where there's this question of, is The Flash changing the history of the world by going back in time? How would you do that with other shows? Would their history inexplicably change too, or would they just ignore it? And it's and it sort of like actually prevents The Flash from telling certain kinds of stories, because because there are other shows in the universe, they kind of can't permanently change something like that because it wouldn't make sense. I bring a Falcon Crest only because Dallas famously brought a character back from the dead and pretended that the previous season was just a dream. But on Falcon Crest, everybody had mourned Bobby Ewing's death, and when he was brought back to life and everything was just a dream, they just went ahead as if it was all real, and they like essentially were in parallel universes at that point, even though they'd spun off from each other. I don't know why I know this, but I find that hilarious that the producers of the one show are like, yeah, your stupid idea isn't gonna fly with us. We're just gonna keep making our own network sitcom.
I do love
CBS.
Your arcane soap knowledge.
That is deep cut. Jane Wyman, ex-wife of the president of the United States, starring in a TV show. That was weird back in the 80s. All right, Ezra in the 718 says, love your show. Well, that's the best letter ever. Thank you, Ezra. It's the highlight of my podcast listening every week. The news broke in the last few weeks that Code Black has dumped two of its leading cast in an attempt to salvage the show for a second season. While I'm not a regular viewer of Code Black, it did get me wondering whether there were any other struggling shows that became successful once they restructured. I know there are plenty that have crashed and burned, but I'm having a tough time thinking of any that survived the overhaul. I'm curious if any of them come to mind for either of you. So life after a major overhaul, maybe like a cast overhaul. Any ideas?
Cast. Well, I mean, the Dick Wolf is famous for Law and Order. Had all that stuff.
Yeah.
That was, they're most famous for enduring cast turnover. I'm trying to think if there was somebody went that was essential on the next. I'm sure that this partly summertime, me not doing it. It's partly television driving my brain.
Yeah.
And it's partly, I'm not a television historian that can make that hint. I'm going to say I don't think so. I don't think that, like, cause you know, there's been some reboots where you're like, that's not the, you know, I mean, there's Bewitched, right? I mean, there's that kind of stuff, but I don't think that, you know, and then there's some shows that just didn't make it, and then were kind of that, you know, they like Seinfeld, and then they get a restart and restart, right. And then they kind of then they became genius, but
like a serious like rethink and teardown, it's that's tougher to imagine.
It's been done, but this is where the not knowing comes in. It's been done, but not successfully.
Yeah, I think I think you're probably right.
Yeah, there's been things where it's like it was gonna be this, and then we decided it'll be that. And I wonder if it's right at the tip of my tongue, but you know what? It never worked. So yeah. Like this, it would be renewed, and then it came back, and then it failed.
Well, if listeners have their ideas, yes, of things that were basically restructured and salvaged with major changes to the cast and crew, and it actually made it work better. Send those in. We'd like to hear about that because we're having a hard time coming up with it.
Right. And I think the caveat, right, is that when we say it gets better, or is successful, it can't just be like it got a second season, yeah, which was then canceled. Yeah. It has to be something better than that.
Like it actually improved and then lived.
Yeah. Right.
All right. This one from Gary in the 510. It's your area code.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Is there more to the super abrupt cancellation of Penny Dreadful than meets the eye? I ask because the addition in season 3 of the Katronia Hardigan character, among other radical changes to the supporting cast, strikes me as inconsistent with the series creator, John Logan, saying he knew midway through season 2 that the series would end with season 3. Throwing away established characters, their relationships, and their shared history is hardly worth the effort if their replacements in the posse appear only in a handful of episodes, are doomed ciphers with no chance to develop any real depth or richness. Meanwhile, those episodes squandered opportunities to deepen the pointlessly discarded characters, and again, why would you do that unless you expected you had time and space to do more? I'm disappointed but not surprised that the show wasn't a big enough hit to continue. The surprise for me is Logan's counterintuitive claim to the effect of, oh yeah, totally, this was always the plan. Gary in the 510. You have any perspective on Penny Dreadful's death?
Yeah, I do. And I think there's a little bit of all of this I think there's a little bit of truth in not only what he's saying, but what Logan is saying, but it's a little different. Logan was saying the show has always been about her, and Eva Green's character, when we decided to end it, this seemed like the logical way, and it was always a show about her, can't go on without her. But he was, he went to Showtime and he said, this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going to end the third season. And Showtime basically said, are you sure? Because they like the show and it's critically acclaimed. The numbers are probably pretty good, but it doesn't really matter what the numbers are. It's a subscription service. So they wanted it to continue. And as we know, Showtime has a history of keeping shows well past the point when you want to watch them. But they did go to Logan and say, hey, what if we spun some of these characters off? And he was just like, no, this is it. This is where we're going. Where the letter is true, I would say, is that I don't think it really went down that way. I think he was kind of tired of it. Yeah. And he has a development deal with Showtime, and there were other things that he could do. And, he's relatively new to it, to television, and he's a wonderful writer. And I think that people like that don't want to do things for 10 years or 5 years. So 3 seems pretty good, especially if Showtime is saying, you know what, you can do this too. And then maybe you can, executive produce this and then do your own. They have a lot of options for him. And so I think there's a little revisionist history. Yeah. Because what the letter is saying is right. It's like, why make course corrections in the second season when you're just, that it doesn't matter to those characters, whatever you do to them, because, Eva Green, we're going to do something to her and end it. And it's her story that matters, meaning that everything that's happening in the middle doesn't matter. I think a good writer doesn't do that. They want those characters to be fulfilled. And so, yeah, ending it kind of prematurely in the third season, I think it did take people by surprise. And I think there was a little bit of revisionist history there. And that's a good spot, because when you say, yeah, you're just making these ciphers, like they're going nowhere. They're never going to be fleshed out because you're going to end the season. And then we never really got to know them or what their story was. So yeah, I think that's a telltale hint that it was kind of a 11th hour decision. And yeah, then they all got together and said, okay, here's our story. Let's tell it.
Yeah. Oh, well,
to the press.
Here's Brian from the 209, my area code of my childhood. But again, yes. Pennsylvania Dutch to my die. I'm not going to say Deutsch because everybody says Dutch, even though they're from German. Get over it. So he says, he throws in some Pennsylvania Dutch knowledge because he was amused that I mentioned some of the names. He says, yes, it is funny. We have a town called Intercourse. You can call someone up and tell them you're in the middle of Intercourse. Yeah, I think I said that. But funnier still, to the mind of a 14-year-old boy in all of us, there is another local town called Paradise. I've been there. And you guessed it. The best way to get to Paradise is through Intercourse. Yeah, it's true. You can also get to Bird in Hand from there. The only way to get to Paradise may be through Intercourse, depending on your starting point. Unfortunately, it is possible to get lost along the way, and if you're not careful, you may wind up at Blue Ball. No fact checking required. These are all real names of places. I have been to the I've been wow. there. I'm just saying, I have been to Paradise, Intercourse, and Bird in Hand, Pennsylvania. There's a corn maze out there that I've been in a couple of times. If you like wow. a corn maze. Anyway, now that the juvenile sort of dirty joking is over, down to business, without question, the highlight of my summer viewing in 2015 was Humans. Mm-hmm. I found every aspect of the show sensational. As soon as the first season concluded, I began anticipating season two and viewing it this summer. But it seems we won't be able to see it until sometime next year. It premieres, I think, in the UK at the end of this year. This leaves me with a major case of the summertime blues. Any tips about a new summer program that might hit the sweet spot for me? Mr. Robot is already on the summer viewing list. I'm looking for something making its debut. Brian from the 209. Anything that might satisfy Brian that you could prescribe for him to watch this summer?
Well, you know, it's, I mean, there's going to be more shows that are coming out. I mean, that's like, there's no end to it, but I think it's probably existing shows. I think that, you know, by the way, I would just say I totally agree with him about Humans, and I can't wait for them to come back. Yeah. I think the delay was that they delayed giving it a second season. And, in fact, I know this because I was prematurely saying that it was coming back for a second season. Maybe I was willing it to happen. And they're like, oh, we have not decided that yet. And I'm like, well, you're going to do it. and they eventually did. But I don't have that kind of power.
Well, I would say if Brian liked Humans and he hasn't seen Black Mirror yet, he should watch that on Netflix.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. And I think that that's I was just trying to like look at the picture of like normally, you know, because it used to be that September to May was the broadcast thing, and then June through the summer was cable, and that was so archaic. I mean, for years now, cable has been so much more successful, and they've bled into the quote unquote traditional season. And now, haha, we're joking. Broadcast networks in the last 5 years have made quote unquote efforts. Well, I don't think it's effort, but they've made effort into the summer. And that's why, you know, American Gothic is just such a thing. So there is a, you know, there, everybody's got shows all 52 weeks of the year. So there's all new stuff. But I would just say, this is a better time. I look at summer as a better time to say, hey, did you watch Aziz Ansari's show? Did you watch Catastrophe? Have you watched Casual yet on Hulu?
Right.
You know, like you said, Black Mirror, Peaky Blinders, you know, Happy Valley. These are all shows that, you know, The Fall. These are all shows that people, I think, need to catch up on. And summer's a good time to do that. And right. I'm about to write for THR starting next week. So there's a little bit of breaking news. So yeah, my story coming in Monday or Tuesday will be about, you know, what should you binge watch this summer just to catch up on, right?
Well, there like, you go.
What can I binge and catch
up
on?
So your prescriptions are coming, is what you're saying, next week.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Good, Brian. So stay tuned for that and enjoy hanging out in the 209 in the meantime.
Yes.
Andy from the Plus 44 says, I've recently cut the cable. I rarely watch live anymore. The result is I'm tending to binge watch a lot more. Latest binges have been Halt and Catch Fire, Mr. Robot, and Best of the Lot, Silicon Valley. Can you recommend any other tech-based dramas? Please not CSI Cyber.
Not a thing. Well, tech-based, you're the guy for that.
I don't think I have anything more, because Halt and Catch Fire, Mr. Robot, Silicon Valley, not CSI Cyber, these are the things, not Scorpion.
Right.
Beyond that, I'm not sure. He's in the Plus 44, so he's probably, it's not a drama, but the IT Crowd. I don't even tech focused. That's a tough one. I'm not sure I've got any. I actually think Black Mirror, which again being in the Plus 4-4, probably already seen it. But that's another one that a lot of that is about technical, technology and its implications for society. I don't know. There's not. You would think there would be more tech stories these days, given how huge an impact tech has on our culture. And I would say, and I'm not just saying this as somebody who writes about tech, although probably I should contact an agent immediately, is I think in these times of confusion, but in also this platinum age of TV with so many programs to choose from, it's a little shocking that there isn't more, there are more stories being told about things related to technology. There should be. Because yeah, it is such a huge impact on our lives, and you don't see that much of it in TV. TV is lagging behind there.
Yeah, I mean, you could talk about how tech has totally destroyed the music industry in certain ways, and then how do you deal with that a little bit? So that could be tech could be incorporated into my dream for a better rock music show. I would say though, and I wonder if it's hard. Yeah, so some like *Halt and Catch Fire*, I think is a great idea. I wonder if it's hard for people to come up with tech ideas where they have to do a lot of tech on the screen and it doesn't really work.
It's true,
and because typing is really boring. Mm-hmm. I will say that this is circling slightly back to *Roadies*. The third episode, there is a Cameron Crowe "Say Anything" moment where, like, you can see it coming. Because it's basically a gigantic tour bus. I always like to say it's like a big neon truck rolling down the freeway. You can't miss it. It's a totally obvious. Well, this one, there's a tour bus coming to somebody's house for this Say Anything moment. And here's the kicker, because I know you haven't seen this yet. It's basically a Cameron Crowe rewriting a Say Anything moment, except this time using emojis. How terrible does that sound? And then rethink whether you want to write incorporate a lot of tech stuff, because that people live on their phones, right? Like Wilco said, we're thankful that our stories fit into phones. But how do you make that interesting other than a bunch of people walking around like zombies looking into their phones or using emojis?
This is a challenge. So, I think Sherlock does a good job with the mm-hmm. visual style of the popping up of
absolutely
of little messages and things. I think that's a good example of getting that point across. Mm-hmm. I think with things like Snapchat, you can actually since people are sending video, you can actually could do some really interesting things for TV. I think there are ways to show it, but just it does impact us in so many ways and changes our culture and changes storytelling. That's the other thing, is that it does change storytelling because you can't tell the same stories. I was watching. It was a movie for this weekend's episode of The Incomparable, and it's set before in an era before cell phones had service or I think it's a scene that's set before there were cell phones at all, and the whole plot would be invalidated if somebody could send a text to somebody else, but they can't, and so they're like so it continues on. So the writers know that this has changed how they tell stories, so maybe they could tell some stories about how that technology is changing people's lives. I don't know. But it's a good note, Andy. Yes. Sorry, I hope we couldn't help that much. There should be more of it. A couple more. Kathy from the Plus 44. So many people from the UK, and we send our hearts out to them.
Sorry, Brexit.
If they're having, if they're feeling bad because of the Brexit vote. Kathy from the Plus 44 says, I want to back up your message about catching up with BBC's Line of Duty, which we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But a slight correction, your correspondent said you could jump into season 2, but the first season, starring Lenny James, and also very good, sets up the conspiracy that recurs in the next 2 seasons, or series, as they say in the UK. The first series, just 5 episodes, 2 and 3 had 6 episodes each. Being a BBC program, rather than 42 minutes, they're a full 58 or 59 minutes, but there's great acting and intense drama that I think you would like. A question for you. Loads of British and Australian actors star on US TV shows. Which would you pick out as doing the best and worst American accents?
Oh, God.
I think Hugh Laurie does a great American accent, to the point where Americans didn't realize that Dr. House was not an American. I think he did a fantastic job. I was constantly amazed by how good Hugh Laurie's English accent or American accent is, given that he's English. Who's a bad... I want to flip that a little bit and say that although he's gotten better, Peter Dinklage's English accent in Game of Thrones, still not very good.
Well, I'm going to do this because I will put this out there, and this will start a war of countries because that's what's going to happen.
Well, now. No, yeah.
I would say Australians do the worst
American accents.
I think that there's something about it, and that Brits do it more often, probably. I think Australians doing American accents, Yanks, are not very good. I think Brits do a better job until they get into a heated scene where they trip over, because there's so many actors where they do a great job, and then it's like, what? It kind of leaked out there a little bit.
Then they lose it a little bit. I would also say that a lot of times what you get is you get these American accents that are not really American accents. They're like, hey, y'all, it's a Texas sort of southern-ish sort of accent from an English person. You're like, nope, that's not, no.
Yeah, that's bad.
No, just like I'm sure American actors would try to do like a Cockney accent, and people would be like, your character's from the North. That's not the Northern accent. And you'd be like, you have multiple accents in England? Really? Yes, we do. Also, okay, this show is set in Scotland. You know what?
Oh, right. That's true. Okay, I got it.
Okay.
All right. So, watching David Tennant do Broadchurch season one, with his accent.
Yeah.
And then come back and do the American accent. And he was terrible
in Grace Point.
In Grace Point. And I think it affected his acting. I think we actually talked about this way back on the podcast. But the point being there, people will say, okay, here's why we can tell that you're not very good at doing an American accent. Because a lack of an accent does not an accent. So you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you couldn't tell where anybody's from, and there's nothing. It's, you know, I don't want the person to be super southern, like you just said. In fact, I just saw something where it was on a shocker. It was on American Gothic, where a woman, a female actress who I know is really good, she was on The Wire, is doing a Boston accent and a Southie accent, and I was just like, oh, that's a terrible idea. I know it's set in Boston. But, oh, this is super distracting. But, yeah, lack of an accent is not, you know, doing the American accent well. Sometimes, and I think David Tennant's lack of an accent, he just seemed like everything that came out of his mouth was vanilla. Like, he was really struggling to not have an accent. And I think it took his focus off on his facial expressions and things that actually people do to act.
We have one more. It's from our friend Brando from the 301. Mm-hmm. Here it is. I'm seeing rumors, and in fact, there's a story on THR.com about this, the absurd lengths AMC has gone to make sure that The Walking Dead cliffhanger isn't spoiled. They apparently filmed the climax of last season's final episode 11 times, killing everybody in the room so that we couldn't figure it out. First off, how ridiculous is this? And second, is this a new level of paranoia about plot elements getting out? This reminds me of the links Apple goes to sometimes to keep product announcements under wraps. It's a funny story, the idea that they actually shot everybody getting killed in the room. I don't know if it's true or not, but what do you feel about like trying to... This is like the Jon Snow stuff from Game of Thrones last year. The game of like misdirection of plot elements and spoilers. How do you feel about that?
Well, clearly the Jon Snow story was handled poorly, and most people were just like, nope, not dead.
Yeah.
And then you pull a muscle, and everybody breaks a back involved in the production trying to lie about it. It's not worth it. It's more effort than it's actually worth. And then you have to bring him back the way they brought Jon Snow back. It's just like, really? He's just going to have like this big gulp of air and he's back. I mean, that's just the worst way to do it. So it was totally not worth it. And let's hope that whatever The Walking Dead is doing will be worth whatever they're doing. But I'm at the point now where, I'm only watching it to be entertained. So they could actually kill everybody and I don't really care.
Maybe that's really what they shot, is he bludgeons everybody to death and that's the end.
And if that was the twist, I'm like, holy hell, I'm back involved in this show now. Yeah, but at the same time, I see where they're coming from. It is one of television's most gigantic shows. And so they are financially invested in people not ruining things so that people watch live and then they get more advertising dollars. So I get it. And so maybe maybe it's not ridiculous to shoot 11 deaths, but for me, I'm like, I don't even care. I don't care who you kill.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of work for a lot of actors and a lot of people on the crew for stuff you're not going to use. It always seems like a waste when you do stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, the Jon Snow thing, don't do it that way.
Well, I mean, just structurally, him dying made no sense, right? Like, for the story. So why are you even trying to keep it a secret?
Exactly.
All right. Well, we've reached the end for now, but we'll be back again next week. Let me give the numbers, unless you want to Columbo me with something in the meantime.
No, I wouldn't want to interfere and then continue your heat stroke. I think you should do it and not die.
I need another popsicle. All right. Okay. You can tweet us. TVTM is the Twitter account, or I am Jay Snell and Tim is Bastard Machine. You can Facebook us, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. And you can email us podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. You can also go to theincomparable.com/members if you like to support the TV Talk Machine directly. You can go there, sign up for a monthly or annual subscription, check the box. You can swear if you like and check that box. Otherwise, you can check the box for TV Talk Machine. And if you want to support just this show, after like the minor administrative costs and the credit card fees and stuff like that, all the rest of your support will come straight to this show. If you check the boxes for other shows, then we split it among the shows. So if you want to support just us or a bunch of other shows, you could do that there. And thank you in advance for that. And that's it for this week. Tim, we'll be back next week. Hopefully it'll be a little bit cooler.
Yeah. You know what? We're just going to put the fans on.
Yeah. If it comes to that, we will.
Yeah. Turn the let's fans not on. Die.
All right. It's cooler here than in Austin, Texas, though, presumably.
Yes.
So, yeah. All right. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. We will see you next week.